Well,
I used to love my chairman, you know, but I'm going right off him. You're right off him because he said I said there'd be no problems in a socialist society. I've never, ever, ever in my life said that, ever. Of course there will be problems. But the position I'm trying to take, I'll try and explain it again. It's rather like my position as a pacifist or any other position who wants to take an ethical position. If people say to me, are you, as conscientious objective boards have done in the past, but they are you a pacifist? I'd say yes. They say, well, what would happen if somebody attacked your daughter? And I have to say, I don't know what would happen. Maybe in that circumstance, my principles would be less strong than the love of my daughter. I don't know. What I refuse absolutely to do is to affect the way I behave now with that principle into some worst case scenario which may occur in the future. We do not know what society will be. That's the honest truth when all these changes have taken place. What I appeal to you all is not to pick out worst case scenarios. Take the principle as it stands now, live it and speak for that. That's what I say. Make what you will of that, Dick.
Well, I'm absolutely opposed to that viewpoint. I shouldn't speak as a chairman.
Of course you should.
But bugger it, I will. See, there's this company, Jesus Socialism, that I don't agree with at all. I just don't agree with it. I mean, there's a declaration of principles that says that men and women in the working class should organise to get hold of the political machinery, the state machine. Why? Just because we like doing it. Oh, we like it. Oh, I did that one. No, because in the event, likely or unlikely, of, you know, a recalcitrant minority taking up arms against us, we will be in a position, unlike this foolish people who demonstrate in the streets and reclaim the streets and say, I will just live our life and we don't care what the state machine says. You control that state machine in order to use it violently if necessary. My comrade says he's a pacifist, and I accept he is one. I'm not. I'm not a pacifist. If a minority attempt to overthrow the wishes of a socialist majority, the reason that we're going to get hold of that state machine is to deal with, I'm accepting this, unlikely proposition. But if it does occur, and if someone asks me, and unfortunately, you know, here's a very small organisation, you know, who's not had a great deal of success recently. But nevertheless, and we're talking about this great future now, which I'm all in favour of, was speaking about these things. But we've still got to answer a question, an outdoor or an indoor meeting or and just in personal discussion with a person. What would happen in the event of, you know, these mad people, and there are plenty of them about, trying to overthrow the wishes of the majority? See? Well, that's why we've got a clause in our Declaration of Principles that says we get a hold of the state machine in order to wield it against them. Now, I'm aware that not everybody in the Socialist Party of Great Britain agrees with that principle, but the majority do, and I do. And those members who don't agree with it usually now go for a piss.
But may I just say, you see, may I come back to my previous...
Excuse me, let that person speak.
I wanted to answer you.
No, you can't do that. I'm the chairman.
Outrageous. No,
a member of the audience is asking a question. Sit down, I know you're saying.
I think this this thing that crops up every so often about the violent minority who might want to stop socialism and the you know, the rest of the society, if necessary, would use violence against them. I mean, I think this is a thing that the party says just to cover itself. I think, look at the thing realistically. Supposing for a moment that 87% of the world's population wanted socialism and wanted to bring it about peacefully. it would be rather difficult for the 13% to organise violently.
What about 51%?
To stop the rest, because they would be so scattered and dispersed all over.
What about 51%?
It would be rather difficult. And not only that, but in any decision that is arrived at democratically, you always have a certain number of people who may not have very strong feelings in favour of something or against it, but are prepared to go along with what the majority want. I mean, if, for example, a sports club want to add an extension to their clubhouse, you might have a certain percentage who are very strongly in favour of the extension, another lot who are opposed to it, but other people in between who have got no strong feelings either way but will go along with what the majority want. So if you've got your 87% who want socialism, you might have another 10% who have got no strong feelings either way, and that leaves you with 3% who might want to organise violently against the majority. I mean, I think it's...
Yeah, but with an issue like the clubhouse, it could cause violence. But may I just make this point again? You see, if I go back to my previous reading, which was on armaments and that, all through that reading, year after year after year, and I used to get the mimeographs in the United Nations of the so-called disarmament negotiations, and the way they got round it every time, somebody would put something on the table and they would know that the other side would come up with the worst possible, often ludicrously unlikely, worst scenario, and that would justify a horrific action to prevent that happening in the remote chance that it did. Now, I refuse to act and speak as a socialist with that mindset. I won't do it. He can do it for me. But that's what goes on. You paint the worst scenario. If you paint it, it's going to happen.
Oh, that's madness. That is idealism. If you paint it, it happens. Come on, that's...
It often does. It's true.
Well, just to answer your point, when you said what you're going to do when it's 51%, well, I don't think it's going to be 51% for long. If you get to 51%, you'll have more than half the world in socialism. And what they'll be doing, they'll be trying to convince the rest of the world to be socialist. It ain't going to take long before. And the instant after 51% would be 52%, and very shortly after that, it'll be 900%. Because I think, like, you have to be... See, capitalism can only exist by taking us a chance, a big chance. And I think once people get a sniff of the potential there is in socialism, then that's going to cure them of being a chance. They won't want to be a chance.
Bring this. Okay. No, you first, and this come.
You first. Yeah,
bring this subject back to William Morris.
Great, good idea.
Perhaps resolve the dispute between chairman and speaker.
Right. No dispute here. No dispute. We're comrades.
I'd like, first of all, to ask the speaker what he considers Morris's view on I'm not going to spell out what it is, but I refuse to use the word scenario. I've expunged it from my vocabulary. But the other point is, I think that really we two are talking across or talking about totally different situations. As it seems to me, Dick is talking about the possibility of a socialist majority bringing into being a socialist society and the possibility of an organised minority, and there could be an organised minority at that stage, resisting it. Now, I go along with the Declaration of Principles, I'll go along with it. If that happened, I don't think it's likely...
Just me,
I'll
cross you off my Christmas list.
Yeah. But if that happened, we would have no option. We captured the state machinery, and we would have to take whatever measures necessary to see that the will of the majority came about. Now, Richard has been talking about, as I understand it, has been talking about socialism, and once it exists, and the necessity for law in a socialist society. Now, laws, as I understand it, and as I think William Morris did, are there for the purpose of maintaining a minority rule. They're there for the purpose of keeping people down. They're not there for the ostensible purpose of stopping crime or doing any of these things that they tell you they're for. The purpose behind law is to maintain the rule of the ruling class. And they don't work. They don't work within capitalism. Laws aren't effective. But the fact that there is a law there does help to give us perhaps a little bit of stability to society, to capitalist society. But I don't see how we're going to need law within a socialist society. It would be totally unnecessary. There's just no point, because we don't have a minority rule. And the purpose behind law, if it doesn't work within capitalism, it certainly won't work within socialism. And to make law work, you need a coercive machinery, which we won't have. So I don't really see that there's any conflict.
Perhaps a comment up there. You come with this.
It's very easy to be a pacifist if you never confront awkward cases, either theoretically or practically. If you never confront cases where there's a threat of force or violence to yourself or to people associated with you, then it's very easy to take a pacifist stance. Surely if you want to argue pacifist cases, you have to confront not necessarily worse cases, you have to confront difficult cases. Everybody would agree that they're a pacifist when there's no threat of violence or force. If you are a pacifist, you have to surely confront cases which are difficult. Otherwise, it's too easy. So I don't think you have to use your term, to confront worst cases. You've got to examine difficult cases. Otherwise, it's using pointless to be a pacifist. Otherwise, you're not a pacifist. In theory, you're not a pacifist.
I'd like to respond to both of those good points.
Excuse me. What's happened here is both the chairman and the speaker have talked. Has anybody else got anything to say? And then I'll ask the speaker, just somebody. No, we can't have the speaker responding to each case.
But it's difficult to keep these questions in mind.
I've got a question, I'm the chairman, I'm ruling this. A question, a point of view from the back.
Well, can I ask them?
And then your second.
For removing.
Your second. Speak up, comrade, in order to be recorded.
I'm very sympathetic to Rich, because although I don't regard myself as a pacifist, I do regard myself as a vegetarian with some crack came to me and said, well, supposing you were stuck on a desert island, the only thing you could possibly eat was rabbits and turtles, what would you do? And I said, well, I'd have to eat meat. Aha! Got you. What kind of crack argument is that?
Well, you tell me, you asked them.
This worst case scenario against this pacifist position that Richard is taking, his principal position, is exactly the same thing. It's worth exactly the same amount of it. In my view, no, it's no value at all. I'm fairly contemptuous of that kind of trickery.
Thank you, Colin.
Point of law, the purpose of laws under capitalism is that they carry the threat and carry out the threat when necessary. A punishment when people go beyond the accepted behaviour of that society. Because that won't happen in a socialist society. We might have rules or codes of conduct. I'm sure we'll all have our own codes of conduct. They won't be backed up with this threat of punishment, will they?
Good point. Any other comment? Yes, Tom?
Well, I'd like to touch that I'm great in respect for Dick Donnelly. I think he's taken some quite strange chairing decisions, and I would very much like to hear what Richard's got to say on these points. I mean, I don't know how the chair for these meetings has decided, but certainly if it had been decided in accordance with usual party practice, I'd quite like the chair to be directed to let Richard have his voice.
I'm going to let him sum up all your questions. Is that okay? Is that okay?
Yeah. Yes.
I think that's a better idea. I think it's more democratic to let people speak as much as possible. The speaker gets speaking for 30 minutes. Let the guy wind up with all these different ideas, not answer each one of them. Otherwise, that's undemocratic. That's my view. I may be wrong.
You should get more time than he does.
Yes. Anybody else? Because it's getting a bit late, but I'm not going to stop anybody. If not, I'll now, in line with what you say, Cameron, in line with what the rest of you say. Oh, sorry, it's coming, I'm sorry.
It's just something that I've always thought about. We imagine socialism's going to happen somewhere in the sweet by and by or something like that. Suppose it was to happen pretty shortly. Now, there are people in the world and that like perpetrating violence and other. People like murdering other people, like Peter Sutcliffe. There's a guy that went to a school in Dunblane and shot all the kids. He didn't stop once he shot one kid. He shot 15 of them. Then he shot the teacher. There's people that like setting places on fire. There's guys that like raping women or wee boys or whatever. What I'd like to know is, you know, to me, if socialism comes about, these things will still be happening. You can say this is a small minority. Suppose it was 1% of the world's population that does these things. This means millions of people are going to be doing this, perpetrating crime against other innocent people. So I think that initially, inside a socialist society, whether it be laws or not, I mean, I don't think that the laws as such, but there would have to be some sort of police force, some sort of agency to detect who's doing these things and stop them from doing it. I don't know what they're going to do after you catch them, but it'd have to be some sort of mechanism for this. I don't see that on a Thursday you're going to have capitalism, and a Friday it's going to be socialism, and people are going to, you know, just, you know, become, you know, rational people and help each other and not do the horrible things that some people do to each other.
Right, you've got something to say, Cameron, there.
Yes, I had a lot to say, but I've forgotten it. I enjoy what I heard of Richard's talk, but I must admit I fell asleep a little bit, but that wasn't his fault. But I did realise that he had not dealt with the subject. And everyone cheered and this, that and the other. I'm afraid I don't worship William Morris as so many people do. I think he had a lot of weaknesses that haven't been brought out. The question of Richard being a pacifist has been dealt with, but there is another point that keeps being brought up. Every time you do an illustration of something, it's always of men protecting their daughters or their wives or what have you. Now, my generation, I don't know how to defend myself, but I do know that my daughter can defend herself against anybody. So those are the sort of people who will bring socialism into being. So let's cut out all this question of we must look after our little old women and this sort of thing, because that won't bring socialism at all. Women are half society, and you must accept that, that they will be half responsible for bringing socialism into existence. Now, when socialism does come into existence, it won't come in smoothly, but the people who bring it in will be better prepared of how to deal with the problems that we're thinking of now. They will have thought this out and know that they have those problems to deal with, and they will be better prepared for that. There was something else, but I forgot it. Anyway, that'll do.
Thank you, Kevin. Right.
No, it was a joke. I would have said the same if it said his son, believe me. I would have said the same if it was his son. I would have said the same if it was him, for goodness sake.
It was an ill-advised statement. Yes, Colin. We all do it.
If you define cities as large groups of people living together with names that don't begin with B, then Birmingham isn't a city, but in fact we all know that it is. Similarly, if you define a state as something that is based on class rule and maintaining the role of a small minority of people at the expense of the majority, then certainly what Huey Armstrong's been talking about, what Adam's talking about, is not a state. But in the same way, actually, obviously it is a state. Huey was talking about a police force. Adam was not talking about a police force, but what he said was that there'd be these standing regulations which would be agreed democratically, and then there would have to be methods for taking away driving licenses while those are courts. Okay, it's not based on class domination anymore, but it's still a state. You can define it, as I presume Adam is doing, it's not a state because it's not based on class rule, in the same way that Birmingham isn't a city because it begins with the letter B. But that's just being precious with your definition. It's a state. So what you're talking about here is a socialist state. Those people who are saying that these rules, these regulations, these police forces, these courts will continue to exist. It is a state I'm talking about.
Okay.
No society that's ever existed has existed without what you could call social mores. However, whatever term you use, people don't live in a state of anarchism. They have certain rules agreed between them on how that society will live. And I mean, I think Adam has raised one good point there. I mean, when you are driving down the street, presumably not everybody, people will not be able to drive which way they like on the pavement at 90 miles an hour. I mean, to call the adoption of certain rules a state, I think is stretching the meaning of the word quite a long way. And,
okay. Hey, Conrad, I'm sorry, I know you've got a lot more interesting things to say, but nevertheless, you know, we started here at some, and we're getting towards the end of it. So unless something really is bugging you, I'm going to ask Richard, because he's heard a lot of people, including myself, and by the way, I herein apologise. I didn't know I was going to be the chairman. I was thinking in it, and I'm out of order as a chairman. I've expressed myself, and I shouldn't have done it, and apologise to the comrades for that. But nevertheless, I'm now going to be a good chairman and say that, you know, I hope everybody's had the view, allowed to express their view, and now I've suppressed my comrade here in many ways, not to answer each question. I'll ask her one more, and then I'll ask you to finish. Is that okay?
All I want to say, like, I think you're jumping the gun a bit here. I mean, we're 25 minutes at least.
You want us to carry on?
And I just can't see that Richard is going to want to speak for 25 minutes. I think other people should.
Okay, comrade, I'm wrong.
For another 10 minutes.
I apologise. I take your point. I take your point, comrade. Do you want to reply
some more? Can I do that?
Yes.
I'm going to just try and remember them all. I just want to make a preliminary point first. I agree with the general principle that as many people could speak as possible. I'm absolutely in favour of that. But there is another point of view that is worth airing, and that it is often undemocratic because at the end you cannot keep the question sufficiently in your mind to give the deserved response to the questions that you receive. That's why I try to answer those questions as I get them, not because I want to hog the meeting. I'll try to remember them. Firstly, you, Cyril. It was a very, very good point. Now, some people have said I've not talked the subject. I thought the subject of the weekend was William Morris. And I did talk, I think, about the stateless society as William Morris saw it. I talked about the stateless society as William Morris saw it in his dream of a stateless society, in which there were no laws. There were, specifically in one of my quotes, no police, no armies, no navies. That is what I was talking about. I'm not talking about the other kind of society. So the point you made was right. They are talking about one thing. That was not what I was asked to talk about. I was asked to talk about the state, the society, as seen by William Morris. And that's what I did. And you can't please all the people all of the time. Now, as to Paul's point about pacifism, well, of course, I have in my life experienced, through my political activities and other things, extreme violence. There are certain times where that's tested more than others. In none of those cases did it concern people I loved. It was usually the state or some somebody attacking me with something at park or something like that. But of course, I have experienced those things. Of course I do. What I say, however, is I don't base my present philosophy upon the action, even if I think about it, that might happen. And that's that. Now, Margaret, of course, if I was being attacked, I'm sure my daughter would want to defend her dad, and she would have the same kind of problem. So it is a completely universal thing. It is a general problem. Again, you know, there are so many ways in which you can approach the subject, and I know you felt I didn't deal with it, but I was dealing with the concept of the state of society, and I tried to cover it. There are many ways. I could give 6 or 7 different talks on the state of society, but this is a William Morris weekend. As for the remark about your daughter, I'm sure you know me well enough to know that that is totally irrelevant to anything I would behave. What was the next question after that? Thank you, Paddy, for your observation, which I entirely agree with. The point I want to... Was there another question after that? You have to remind me.
No,
okay. Fair, I take that point. All right, fair enough. Was there another question after that? Yes, about the... well, again, that was the same sort of problem, but except that you went a bit further and said it would actually happen within that society, which I disagree with because, as I pointed out, I don't believe that society would exist if those sort of attitudes prevailed in any kind of measure whatsoever. So that's that one. Was there another one? No?
Did you deal with Adam's point?
Yes, I did think I pointed out quite clearly that in any sensible society, if you were driving on one side of the road, you would be a lunatic to drive on the other side to everybody else. It's not only doesn't need a law, it's common sense. And in a socialist society, of course, we would behave with common sense. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a socialist society.
But surely there would be the odd exception to that.
The main point, just to finish, is that I emphasise again, what I refuse to do is to project my thoughts and my feelings and my visions of how we might live as human beings on some modified version of some scenario that may or may not happen. As far as I am concerned, one of the great and most joyous truths of my life is that human beings are capable of living together in harmony and cooperation. And I shall live that until I die, believe that until I die, and I shall continue to act on that basis and nothing else.
Oh, thank you. Comment, you've got a point.
Yeah. I'd say that the word pacifism, it implies an absolute, and as a political philosophy, if you like, and it would probably be better to use the word that you'd approach things in a non-violent way. As much as possible, because you know what we've been talking about tonight is about, you know, it's about, you know, not dealing with crime in a punishment type of situation, with revenge and stuff.
Comments here?
Right. That's a great point, Steve.
Right. So, do we agree at 9:12 that? The Speaker and the Chairman are going to kick lumps out of each other.
Go on, give us a kiss, Dick, go on.
Is there any other points of view? If not, thank you very much for the kind attentive hearing. It's just a pity the Chairman, the Speaker, hadn't addressed the subject, but there we go.